Ideas matter. Ideas matter. This is Dialogue.
Hello and welcome to Dialogue. China's GDP grew by 5.3% in the first quarter this year over the same period last year, thanks to a strong growth in high-end manufacturing. Data shows an increase in retail sales of consumer goods, growth in national investment, and an increase in imports and exports, all showing a steady recovery of the Chinese economy. What else does the most recent data show, and what were some of the highlights of the first quarter? Joining me today are Benjamin Carpenter, Managing Director of China Market Research Group, Anthony Chan, former JP Morgan Chase Chief Economist, and Qu Qiang, Research Fellow at Beijing Foreign Studies University. Welcome. Ben, I will start with you. So 5.3%, people would say that's better than expected. Before that, there's a Reuters polling of economists. Most people would say that Chinese economy would expand at 4.6%. So what do you think explains this higher than expected growth?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of external pessimism about the market here and about really how weak the economy has been. But I think the reality is the government's placed a lot of emphasis on getting manufacturing up and running and trying to find new ways to leverage China's manufacturing base. And you're starting to see that really take effect now with some key high-value segments like EVs. And so I think that's really gone a long way towards driving growth. I think if you look at the consumer market, a lot of people also felt like consumers would not get out and spend. And so far this year, they have been, at least to some extent. And so I think that what's helped China is you've had sort of positive news all across the board, and that's really added up.
Mm-hmm. So Anthony, what factors do you attribute it to about this better than expected economic expansion here?
Well, I'm certainly pleased that the 5% target of economic growth for this year is certainly within reach, and in fact, exceeding it on a year-over-year basis this time around. When I look at the data internally, what I see is very good strength from fixed investment. Fixed investment, of course, coming in stronger than expected, and that was very impressive. That's certainly pushing things much, much higher. I agree with Ben that certainly there was strength across the board, but I would still like to see more strength on the consumer front. Retail sales were good, but certainly a little bit below expectations. And of course, the property sector continues to remain somewhat soft. But I am encouraged by the fact that policymakers have in fact lowered interest rates. That certainly, hopefully, will stimulate consumer spending and certainly will give a shot in the arm to the property sector. And so I'm hoping that things get a little bit better. But again, looking at the data in March, there was a little bit more softness in March relative to January and February, and we can't ignore that.
Mm-hmm. But how do you explain this slowdown in terms of retail sales in March, especially compared with the previous month, February, Anthony?
Well, certainly one way to explain it is that if the property sector, which is a big chunk of the wealth of consumers in China, is not showing robust strength, then maybe there is some hesitation on the part of consumer spending. Also, let's face the reality that unlike, say, the United States, where there was a lot of stimulus during the slowdown, not as much stimulus in China. I am impressed by the fact that they are giving some discounts if you trade in some used appliances. So that's a step in the right direction. And of course, lower interest rates. But again, they can't lower interest rates too much until the United States Federal Reserve lowers rates, because you don't want to see the currency getting too much weaker in China. But overall, I would say I was very pleased with these numbers because they exceeded expectations. We can look at the components and see some strengths and weaknesses, but overall, the picture is bright.
Mm-hmm. Overall picture is positive. Ben, if you look at the consumption, of course, as Anthony pointed out, people's wealth is closely associated with the property sector. So that might explain the reluctance in a sense, to spend long term. What's your prediction? We do see the pickup, strong pickup in early this year, January, February, of course, that's the biggest festival, Spring Festival. But there's a slowdown in March. So what's the likely trend for, say, for, you know, for April and afterward?
So I think, yes, the earlier part of the year, a lot of that was driven because of some of the big holidays that we had in China. You know, with the consumer right now, the money is there. The problem is people really do still have a little bit of a crisis of confidence. And so they're saving at a fairly high rate right now. They're putting a lot of money into insurance products or just having it sit in the bank, sort of taking a wait and see attitude. I think if we do start seeing real estate numbers shift and we start seeing property values come up or there's less news about developers having defaults, you will see consumers starting to feel a lot more comfortable going out and spending. I think the good news right now is, you know, after Qingming, which didn't have very strong numbers, you're still seeing a lot of younger consumers now out on the street, going to cafes, going to restaurants. So they are opening their wallets. I think the trick right now is how to get them to take that next step to go back to actually spending money on consumer goods. My expectation is probably through the first half of the year and into the third quarter of the year, things will still remain kind of slow. But I'm actually fairly optimistic that over the next 12 months, we're going to start seeing a real rebound in spending here.
Okay, rebounding spending. So Professor Qu Qiang, you know, another impressive figure is this, that's a fixed assets investment, you know, like it picked up by 4.5% year on year. So among which the growth of investment in high-tech industries was even more rapid. So what do you make of that? You know, we say, you know, high-tech manufacturing, high-end manufacturing. So what are the specific sectors we, you know, in which we see strong growth in investment here?
Well, in China, everybody knows that since last year, we have pulled a very big plan to try to invest more in the new quality productive forces, namely the digital devices, green economy, environmental protection, as well as for, you know, social services economy. So actually, the country has pulled into a lot of, you know, investment into those areas. For example, everybody knows this year, I think central government has already spared like 200 billion Chinese yuan worth of the budget on what we call the renovation on infrastructures and devices, which means for a lot of factories, tech companies, local government, they will have certain budget to, you know, upgrade their infrastructures, for example, digitalize them and make them smarter, or to use new energy sources for this kind of productions. So this will become a new force in the future productivities in China. And also everybody knows last year and the year before last year, China actually suffered from, you know, very disastrous droughts and also floods. I assume that the rest of the world also will, you know, have a similar experience. And very sadly, according to the weather forecast this year, we will have La Nina effect all over the globe. So the flood is going to come more ferociously this year. So ever since the end of last year, the central government of China has spared 1 trillion yuan worth of infrastructure fund. Now, this earmarked budget actually will be put into this year's infrastructure building for more of the anti-flood and anti-drought infrastructures, which is good for, you know, future protections of our productivities. So I think all this combined together, you will have a rough picture of how Chinese, you know, infrastructure upgrading will be look like, you know, of this year. And more than that, I think this year, the whole infrastructure related and also the technology related, you know, upgrading spending will be mounting up to 5 trillion yuan worth of the GDP. So this will also point to more of the impetus into our economy, not only the Q1, but also Q2 and Q3.
Yes, well, in infrastructure construction has long been a strength, you know, in terms of economic expansion there. But also, Ben, if you look at industrial production, it's also equally impressive. The number jumped 6.1% in the first quarter from a year ago. Of course, mostly boosted by this strong growth in high-end manufacturing. So if you the manufacturing purchasing managers index, people would say official PMI, mostly on the Chinese, big Chinese companies, you know, many of them state-owned companies, expanded for the first time in 6 months. And also if you look at the private sector, based on the Caixin S&P manufacturing PMI, also it hit this, it's the strongest reading in more than a year. So what do you make of these, you know, very strong figures, you know, in both sectors, basically.
Yeah, I think when you look at manufacturing here, for most of the last 6 months, there really just wasn't a lot of demand either in China or externally. And so I think a lot of factory owners were really struggling to find buyers for their products. They were struggling to put future orders into place. And luckily, I think we've worked through a lot of that malaise. You know, the reality is certainly within the high value manufacturing space, there is quite a bit of demand. I think, you know, again, EVs are a really great example there. China has gone through a massive transition in terms of EV adoption. And it's really the Chinese firms that are manufacturing in that space that have sort of taken advantage of this technology shift. And I think, interestingly, now you're seeing a lot of external demand as well for Chinese vehicles coming from Australia, coming from Southeast Asia, from Africa, from the Middle East. And so I think that right now what we're seeing is globally, the economy is stabilized. Globally, we're expecting to see reasonably strong growth this year. And China, because it's invested so much money in high-value manufacturing and making it more efficient, is now starting to kind of reap the gains of that, I think, a little bit. So manufacturers should feel happy right now, and I think they're in a good position for the rest of the year, as long as the political situation doesn't get too challenging.
Well, yes, there's a sector, there's a factor of you know, politics there. But you know, globally, of course, we still, to a large extent, we are connected with each other. So it's true to every economy, including the Chinese one, of course. And if you look at imports and exports, for example, they exceeded 10 trillion yuan for the first time in history as a record. And also, there's increase basically of 5% in the first quarter. So Anthony, obviously the Chinese import export in 4.9%, 5% growth, very strong trade. So that also helped.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, you saw a lot of strength in January and February. It did taper off a little bit in March, but I am also encouraged by the fact that the US economy continues to remain resilient, which will mean extra demand for Chinese manufactured goods. And to the extent that the global economy continues to perform well, the IMF is encouraged with global economic growth. That should be another positive tailwind for the Chinese economy. And as the Chinese shift a little bit towards supporting consumer spending, we will see that you'll get support on the export side, and hopefully you get some support on the domestic side too.
Mm-hmm. Well, Anthony, you know, if you look at the industrial production, you know, in this three sector, the production of 3D printing equipment, charging stations for EVs, and electronic components, they all surged about 40% compared a year to a year earlier. You know, such strong production here. Of these sectors. So obviously it's for both domestic consumption and also demand overseas?
Yes, and in fact, the EV market for China is robust. We know that the Chinese have done very, very well on the EVs. Their products are being demanded all over the world. They're finding good markets, certainly in Latin America and certainly in Europe. So all that is very, very encouraging. And in fact, moving towards environmental friendly manufacturing production is greatly welcomed by the global economy. And that's something that China should be very proud of.
Mm-hmm. Well, Qichang, you know, if, of course, the Chinese government has made a lot of efforts to attract, you know, to continue to attract, I would say, foreign investment, you know, like, say, unilateral visa-free treatment to about 11 European countries, for example. And also, you know, Chinese leaders, you know, had met with, you know, CEOs and business leaders from the U.S., from European countries. So what about efforts? How successful have that effort been in terms of attracting, in terms of foreign investment growth there?
Well, I think definitely the visa policy is working very well. Actually, according to statistical numbers, ever since last year, China has been providing these visa-free policies for the friendly nations. In the same years, I think the tourist headcount into China has been, you know, increased more than 33% averagely for every country. And also by the end of the last month, for many countries, for example, like European Union's countries, most of the countries, the tourist into China has been increased by more than 60%. Well, if you take a look at a more direct image, for example, in the Canton Fair, which has been just happening right now, there have actually been more than 20% of the exhibitors' numbers up more than last year. And let me quote, last year is already a very, very high numbers of participation at the Canton Fair. And also, if you take a look at the inbound tourism numbers, and also in many of the most popular tourist sites in China, you will see many of the foreign face in here. But I think the visa-free policies is just one of the facilitators of the people-to-people exchange between China and the outside world. I think the fundamental attractions into China is actually the economy of China. For example, as you just mentioned about EV, I think right now most of the companies just to try to join in the Chinese investment and the partnership is because China is providing most important the fundamental ECUs parts and also the chassis into this game. For example, everybody knows that Stellantis is a European EV maker, but actually their ground parts, actual designs, belongs to Chinese companies. And also their batteries has been purchased from the Chinese company, for example, like the BYD and the New York Times. So all this kind of the cooperation has been happening not only in EV, but in many, many fronts like the green energies, the digitalization. Mm-hmm. So because of these are expanding a spillover to the rest of the world. So I think most of the merchants, people are coming to China from the rest of the world.
Mm. Well, Ben, for sure, if you see this securities market, we do see this coming back, or investors are focusing on or turning attention at least to the China market here. The data from HSBC Holdings showing that over 90% of emerging market funds are starting to increase their holdings in the Chinese stock market. And in the first quarter of 2024, the cumulative net inflow of northbound funds exceeded 68 billion yuan, far exceeding the entire 2023 net inflow of approximately 43.7 billion yuan to A shares. So can we be sure that, let's say, there are clear signs of global capital flowing back to China?
Yeah, I think there are two trends. I mean, leaving out securities for a second, I think the other thing we've seen with a lot of foreign companies is they really cut back on investment in China over the last few years, kind of taking a wait and see approach to see what was going to happen here with the economy. I would say in the last month, I've had many, many discussions with international firms that have sent global leadership to China for the first time in 3 or 4 years so they can have a better feel for what's happening on the ground. And so they can start setting strategy here for how they jumpstart investment into the market again. So I see that as a very good sign. If you look at investors and you look at a lot of these investment funds, most of the Western funds really unweighted their holdings in China over the last couple of years. There was a lot of concern about the underlying fundamentals of the economy. There was a lot of concern about the stock market essentially just being very overvalued here. But now a lot of those investors are looking at the market. They're saying, actually, China does have a good growth opportunity going forward. We're probably underweighted in the market. And so that's why we're starting to see this money coming back in. And I think we'll probably see that trend continue as long as we see the consumer market holding up okay. So we do want to see consumer spending stay at or above that 5% rate, because I think right now people look at the numbers and say probably it's maybe a little bit lower than we'd like to see, but investors are definitely interested and they're definitely coming back and making plays here.
Mm-hmm. Ben, does that also have anything to do with the political atmosphere, in particular relationship between China and the US or China and the European Union? In terms of their decision making, whether to continue to invest or take a wait and see attitude?
Yeah, I think if you're talking about from the corporate perspective, most large corporations that have exposure here they're not really thinking about the politics so much as when is the right time to be making their push in China. They know they need to be here. I don't think I've ever had a conversation with a large multinational where they've said, okay, our days in China are over. It's more figuring out how they can be competitive going forward and what that looks like. And I think a lot of those companies now are really starting that investment process again. I think if you're talking about fund managers, unfortunately, politics do come into play. I think there are a lot of US funds that really feel like they can't invest directly in Chinese companies right now. And so the way that they get exposure to the China market is actually investing offshore in international firms that have a lot of exposure here. And I think it's going to be a long time probably before US investors or some European investors come back. The good news, though, is there's a lot of money elsewhere, and a lot of those fund managers are looking very closely at China right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, speak of consumption, retail sales, etc. It has a lot to do with the Chinese, another sector that is the property sector. It is seen as a drag, and it is a drag in terms of economic growth. So, Anthony, we know that there's a problem with the property sector, and the Chinese thinking is very clear. That is to basically turning away from relying on the property sector. I think to that front, most of people agree with this path. The thing is, how long will it take? And how do we deal with this property sector? Shall we continue to pump up this property sector, or shall we say leave it alone? Or what's the right approach to deal with that?
Well, I think the right approach is to give it some support. I think the Chinese leadership has been very clear on this, and that is that they would prefer quality economic growth, and they don't view the property sector as super high quality. But nonetheless, it's an important segment comprising between 25 and 30% of the overall economy. I think the fact that they are moving towards lowering interest rates, maybe even lower reserve requirement, all that is very, very supportive with the understanding that the value of real estate is tied to what happens to the confidence of consumers. Other parts of the Chinese economy are doing well. As Ben mentioned, the Canton Fair, which I looked at the statistics, were very, very encouraging. That's a city that's dear to my heart because that's where my dad was born and raised. So I'm very proud to see some increased activity on that front. Again, the People's Bank of China has to be very careful not to lower interest rates too much because they certainly have the constraint of the foreign exchange of the renminbi. But to the extent that the Federal Reserve in the United States starts lowering interest rates later this year, that will encourage the Chinese to also lower interest rates without having to worry about the foreign exchange value of their currency. And that will give some support. It's not a situation where you have to prop up the property sector, but it's one where you want to offer some support so that it can somehow get better. Remember that even in the United States, we had a property sector crisis during the global financial crisis. And what we did was to offer a little bit of support, and eventually it recovers. So I have full confidence that it will take time, but with a little bit of support, eventually we will see that sector also slowly recovering at some point. It is not an exception for China to have problems with the property sector. All parts of the world have had periods like that, and it's just a matter of being patient and offering some support, not wholehearted support, but some support until things improve.
Mm-hmm. Well, patience, it takes some time. Ben, Fitch, the rating agency Fitch downgraded its outlook on China from neutral to negative last week, citing property-reliant growth as the source of increased uncertainty. And of course, China is working on, to transition away from relying on property market. The thing is, what we are seeing, this 5.3% growth, strong growth. Can we say, the growth in other sectors, in high-end manufacturing, is making up the loss of the growth in the property sector?
Yeah, I mean, this rating coming from Fitch is interesting. I think the reality is this looming property crisis has been with us now for a number of years. The government probably, frankly, saw that it was coming and going to be an issue and has been working to try to mitigate that long-term risk. I think the big challenge with the property market is it's responsible for so much tax revenue at the local city level. And there isn't really an easy answer for how to recapture that revenue somewhere else. And so I think that's where the challenge is. But I think even given the current property market situation, it's clear that China's economy is moving. It's clear that there is at least some consumer demand, which can be strengthened over time. It's clear that manufacturing is alive and well, exports are alive and well. So frankly, I do think that there are some risks for the economy here, but at the same time, I'm also cautiously optimistic. I think that China is going to be able to hit its targets this year. I think probably we'll end the year in a better position in terms of the overall quality of economic growth than we started the year. So I think we're in a good position and we're going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, positive outlook there. You know, as we say, the global community is connected. Let's say the 2024 spring meetings of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank Group will be held from April 15th to 20th. According to a Bloomberg report, Professor Qu Qiang, here's a question. You know, it said basically, you know, Secretary Yellen of the U.S. Will most likely mention or highlight this, you know, what she says about the Chinese overcapacity issue, in particular EVs. So what do you make of that? You know, people would ask, but there is basically no import of Chinese EVs into the U.S. market. Why the U.S. is so focused on the Chinese EVs here?
Well, you know, she's a politician right now. Actually, I was in New York, you know, 2 days ago in a pre-meeting of the IMF Spring. Actually, we talked about this, and also we have seen the brief about the Yellen's visiting to China. Actually, when she was in China, she didn't quite mention about the capacity, you know, during the meeting with the leaders. Well, you know, the politicians say whatever they got to say to their own media, you see. It's about gaslighting to, you know, their own media. Actually, I think EV, you know, right now has been going through a very rapid growth period of time. It's like, I do remember we have the 3G technology smartphone, or when we have some other product very popular. So all kinds of capacity will swoop in, like the German capacity, Japanese capacity, American capacity, like, you know, Tesla. So right now, it seems like a very crowded market, like AI, right? Everybody tried to scoop a cup of cake out of it. But in the long run, because this is a very, very important trend, because the transportation is going to go green, is going to go EV-ized. So this, in the future, will have more of the shortage of the supply.
Thank you for joining us. With that, we come to the end of today's show. Again, many thanks to our guests. I'm Xu Qingzhuo. Thanks for being with us.